You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get started. Welcome this morning to the Dallas Fort Worth chapter of the Aerospace and Defense Forum. My name is Craig Cox. I'll be moderating this morning. I am a partner at the law firm of Bellman & Martin in Dallas. Is this anybody's first meeting? So we've got a couple. So it's great. We got a few people here at his first meeting. So just a little bit about the Aerospace and Defense Forum. The forum is a global community providing opportunities for communication, collaboration, and commerce between aerospace and defense business leaders. It was founded in 2010, and there are over 1,600 people on the mailing list, and there are 6 chapters, mostly in Southern California, but also here in Dallas, and they're starting one in Houston as well. So we have Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, South Bay, Dallas, and Arizona, and a new chapter being planned in Houston. So each chapter meets once a month, has a presentation on a business topic relevant to the aerospace and defense industry, or a tour, as we have this morning with Kintari. All chapter meetings are recorded, audio recorded, and I think some of them are video recorded as well. And they are available on the Aerospace and Defense Forum website. So you can go if there's a presentation in the Los Angeles chapter that looks interesting to you, you can always go up and pull and listen or watch any presentation for any chapter anytime. So. Periodically there are invitation-only roundtables scheduled for small groups of people to get together and discuss relevant issues. You can always go to the Aerospace and Defense Forum website for any additional information. So hopefully everybody dropped their business card in the basket outside, so we collect everybody's business card for every meeting, and then at the end of the meeting you will be given a sheet with everybody's name and contact information that was at the meeting today. So if you have somebody you had a conversation with that you wanted but didn't get their business card, you will have to have their contact information. So you're also invited to stay after the meeting's over. Please stay and network. Please stay and chat with everybody to your heart's content. Not the time for sales, so we ask that you not distribute materials if you're a service provider or a company that services the aerospace and defense industry. Please save those things for after the meeting. We ask that you not distribute materials during the meeting.
Unless there's money in them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can always hand the envelope with money. So. The first thing we like to do in the meeting is just to go around and have everybody introduce themselves and give your name, where you work, and then just a little 5-word description of your company or your industry. So, for example, my name is Craig Cox. I'm a partner at Bell, Nunley & Martin, and we are a full-service commercial law firm here in Dallas. So I think that was a couple more than 5, but that's essentially it. So, Mike, you want to start, and we'll go around.
Where? Mike McNair. I'm here at Kintari, principal research scientist. My areas of focus have been unmanned systems and social interactive robots.
Ivan Clements, also here at Kintari, director of research and background in electrical engineering and microsystems development.
Russell Rahan, also at Kintari, working on the composite materials strength and light prediction.
Okay.
Go ahead, Alpha.
Okay. Gordon Payne from Vectornet Technologies. We are specializing in MIMS initial navigation systems. Thank you.
I'm Jared Miller. I'm president of Foresight Automation. Foresight Automation is a Fort Worth-based engineering firm specializing in custom robotic systems, industrial control systems, data acquisition systems, things like that. And I'm a UTA grad. VSME 84 and 90.
Manny Lozano, with Nico Matic. We're an original equipment manufacturer of interconnects for aerospace, defense, and security.
I'm John Sess. I'm out here at Kintari, Director of Business Development and Marketing, and my main focus is to connect industry with our researchers to help commercialize technology.
Thank you, McCabe. I'm Executive Director of the Research Institute here, and you'll hear all about us over the next hour.
I'm Andrew Crowley. I'm the CEO at AeroBliss Laboratory. We do fire testing for the aerospace industry.
Daniel Murray. I'm an intellectual property attorney. I work with Craig at Bell & Martin in Dallas.
Ed Linhart, and I'm the Chairman and CEO of BCBB Holdings. We do consulting work for the aerospace industry, software, and manufacturing systems automation.
I'm
Tom Allen with Opango. We're a full-service learning solutions company. We also do a lot of graphic art illustrations in the aerospace industry.
I'm Aditya Das, a scientist. I'm also the technical lead for the ASP division here at Utah.
Fantastic. So just some quick little few things before we move on to the presentation. Just want to quickly say that we are a member only. It is a membership, and it's a driven organization. So we do ask people to join. You can come to the first meeting or two. We're happy to have anybody come for a while, but then after that, we ask that you would go ahead and join the forum. The membership fee is not high at all. It's a very very nominal membership fee. For that membership fee, you can get free attendance at any meeting of any chapter of the AD forum anywhere at any time. You get the first opportunity when we have tours. We had a tour at Lockheed last year, see the F-35 production line, and that was very popular. As a member, you get first shot at signing up for those tours. You get access to the members-only website at portions of the website, which include all the pre-recorded presentations from the other chapters. There's also a member directory. You get access to the A&D forum newsletter. There's a warm introduction service. I know that Ivan is happy to help facilitate introductions if you see somebody else in the member list and you want to meet them. You can work with Ivan, and Ivan will figure out how to get you introduced to someone on that list that is interesting. And you also have first invitation to peer roundtables. So if you're not a member, you can become one by going to, please go to the website, aerospaceandfencing.org, you go on there, and it's really easy to sign up. You can put in your email address to get on the email list, to get all the chapter information, and you can also become a member there. So we also have chapter sponsors that help defray the cost of all these meetings. The chapter sponsors for the Dallas chapter are Utari and Bell Nunley, and I think Utari provided breakfast again this morning, so thanks to Utari for the breakfast. We have, like I said, as a forum member, you get access to any other meeting anywhere at any time. So we always kind of go through and let you know what the other chapters are doing. So the Dallas Fort Worth chapter in November is going to be the UTA Aerospace Vehicular Design presentation on that. In Los Angeles on October 21st, we have Tom Fitzgerald, Director of Engineering, Space and Missile Systems Center at the Los Angeles Air Force Base. On November 18th, it's Michael Gallo, President and CEO of Kelly Space and Technology. For the Orange County chapter, that's Steve Harrington on November 3rd. He's going to be speaking on securing a DARPA SBIR to develop rocket fuel pump. The San Diego chapter on November 15th has a cybersecurity panel. And the Arizona chapter has a tour of Orbital ATK on November 10th. This information is also on the website, so you can always go and look at the calendar, look at the information on the calendar for the website. So I'm going to introduce Dr. Das now. So automation science has revolutionized manufacturing operations and services by making them faster, cheaper, better, and safer. Historically, the domains of mobility and manipulability have been treated separately, where mobile robots are seen as primary enablers of unmanned systems, while robotic manipulators branch into the manufacturing sector. The research and development at Utari aims to bring a disruptive transformation to the field of dynamic, multi-robot deployment and control optimization and execution. This morning, Dr. Aditya Das, Lead Autonomous and Intelligent Systems Division at Utari, will present on the above topic and take us on a tour that will show the multi-robot cooperative control and modular hybrid manufacturing. Dr. Das leads the Autonomous and Intelligent Systems Division at Utari, and also maintains a joint appointment as adjunct professor in the Electrical Engineering Department at University of Texas at Arlington. His R&D focus includes flexible manufacturing, cooperative control, heterogeneous systems integration, rate-independent automation, miniaturization technology, instrumentation, and enhanced human-machine interface. Dr. Das has received over $2 million in research grants and contracts. Dr. Das received his master's and doctorate degrees in electrical engineering from UTA in 2005 and 2009. Dr. Das is a senior member of IEEE, and he's authored and co-authored 40 technical publications at international conferences, journals, and articles, and has three U.S. pending patents. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Das.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Beck, for the introduction, and welcome. Today, like Craig mentioned, this presentation is divided into three segments. I'll give a brief overview of the work that we've been doing in our division, and then we will take you to the tour in two of our labs. By no means that's the comprehensive representation of Udari, and we have a lot of other things, so please visit us at our website, and also speak to the people who work here. I'll speak to Jonathan, business development officer. So, but then today my focus will be knowledge-based automation. Now that term may sound a little fuzzy to a lot of people, and I'll try to untangle that through my presentation, this brief presentation. So before I get into the details, I would like to point out the motivations, why we are doing this. And like the video that we ran, our primary motivation comes from technologists and the commitment to those that basically create positive evolution of mankind, so making things that's better for life and better life conditions. So the way we do that is through systems that are prepared for all eventualities. So means if you have dedicated systems, that can only do so much, and you can add more and more sophistication to existing platforms by increasing the cost. But if there is another way to achieve the same level of capability and performance, if we can reuse the same hardware and the software for different applications. So that's one of the motivations. And then lastly, and not by any means least, the human factor of it. Building machines and making them more and more farther from human beings is not the right way to go about, because eventually you will create a new race of machines and robots, not really something that human or does have that human touch. So our focus also is motivated by the human aspect of any machinery or any robotics, making them more compatible, making them more interfaced to use with the human race. That's another biggest aspect of our research. So like the video showed, we primarily work in TRL level 3 to 7, 4, 3 or 4 to 7 or 8, which is basically the applied science where there is very little resources currently available in the market space. So if you look at this chart, there are a lot of research going on in universities, the fundamental science, and obviously the industry is doing a lot of work. But then there is a big gap between taking the fundamental technologies and making it commercializable. That transition path is not fully resourced, we believe. So that's where we try to bridge the gap through our research, and that's primarily the focus of this research institute, and that's been the case for the last three decades here that we've been in existence. So one of the things when we talk about bridging that gap comes to mind is how each marginal cost for any product or any process that you are developing is impacted by different ways to do so. So obviously in industry this is primarily driven by the volume. If you're making a large volume of products, then you will probably set up factories to do that, and you will not use a lot of manual labor once the process is identified. But if the production volume is low, generally it makes sense to use manual labor. But there is a point when we need to switch from manual labor to full-scale automation, and that is primarily driven by the production volume. So more and more the volume gets, it makes more sense to incorporate automation. So the problem is, in today's market, you don't have products lasting for that long. So if you have, for example, iPhone, every year or every 2 years they come up with a new model. So although their form factor design is very similar, but now if you want to extend that concept to aerospace industry, where you have to come always innovate to make it better and safer, it makes sense. There is a point which like a cutoff point which marks the previous generation to the new generation of products. So it doesn't really go beyond a certain point. So if you have that mass automation model incorporated, it becomes a burden after a certain point, because you need to switch to a different product, you need to switch to a different process, and you need to keep up with the new and upcoming technologies like additive manufacturing these days coming big. So there is a cutoff point which makes it somewhat inefficient to have a dedicated automation line. So we talked about how we go from this skill-based manual work and then not go all the way to the rule-based mass automation, but we can find something that is in the middle if we can reuse automation. And there is a niche market right there. And this is primarily the tourist industry where it is right now, because you'll have very fast life cycles, product life cycles. They need to be upgraded, they need to be replaced. And by the time that needs to happen, the volume is not really in millions, but in thousands or tens of thousands. So that's a new evolving industry that we now experiencing. So that, I would call that the third industrial revolution. To have that, we need to have new capabilities, and that is the niche market that we are targeting. So this reusable automation is what we term as knowledge-based. So what happens when you go from rule-based to knowledge-based? Rule-based tells us that I have 10 rules and I have to follow those. That machine interprets that way. Now, the knowledge base says that if there is a 11th or 12th eventuality, how to deal with that? Should I just stop and say that I cannot do it, or try to solve that problem? So that additional aspect of adaptability, interoperability, and communicability is what marks the knowledge basis. And that's what we try to achieve through our research over here. So we do that through synergistic and synchronous systems. Again, that term may be a little more confusing, but the synergy comes from the two primary aspects of robotics, mobility and manipulability. They have been historically separated from each other. I mean, you have mobile robots, they have their set of applications. You have robotic manipulators, they have their set of applications. So our focus is to combine both so that we can leverage both the capabilities. And basically, we can build factories on the move, on the go, or we can build mobile platforms that can do additional things. This has been done to some extent in space explorations, like the Mars rover is one good example of that. But how to bring that into the actual industry of today? And then not only that, how to create a synergy between man and machine? So that aspect of cooperative framework is what we are dealing with here. And then there are three primary research focuses: the control aspect of it, the coordination, and the communication between man and machine. So we do that through several innovative ways, which some of you will experience in the labs today. The why we're doing it, again, to meet the ever-growing need for faster, better, cheaper, and safer systems. That can replace humans in those type of works, but then still maintain that human aspect of it that doesn't come in separate. So we don't end up with another race of transformers and humans separated. So, and the target application, these are some of the target applications that we have currently invested our resources in terms of active projects, coordinated swarm control for surveillance and other mission-specific tasks. On-demand, on-site, product agnostic manufacturing. Now that if you have reusable tools, you can be product agnostic. You can build product A and product B in the same platform by minor modifications and adaptability. This is another interesting aspect that we're currently looking at is sacrificial robots. Military robots are generally expensive. They do a lot of automation work in dangerous situations, but each module costs significant amount. So how to build the same capability but at a fraction of the cost so that you don't really feel bad if you have to sacrifice those hardware. So that's another aspect of it. And then social robotics for cognitive enhancement in children and elderly, that's another aspect of our focus that's directly related to the human factors that I described. And lastly, the product process and plant automation, how to do all that holistically to make sure that I have a plant that evolves with my demand. So these are the active projects currently either externally or internally funded at this time, and this is what our research is currently in. We have a lot of robotic platforms. Some are custom developed, some are off the shelf, some are super expensive, like close to $1 million, some are really cheap, few tens of dollars. So again, we have our research tries to be more platform independent, product agnostic, which allows us to implement the same type of control, coordination, and communication on all of these platforms. And again, all these different platforms will bring them together. So, and then we have this chart over here shows all our technical capabilities. We can go from start to finish. We have a fully equipped institute over here that can do, again, just from a simple idea to all the way to the functional product. We can do everything under one roof over here. We have the interdisciplinary capability to do so. In the interest of time, I'll just introduce two little in-depth technical concepts just to give you an idea of what you might see in the labs. So if you have complex robots or even simpler robots, but a lot of those, there is a lot of control issues with that. You have a lot of user freedom on one platform, or you have multiple platforms with different in an unmodeled environment. So we have something called integral reinforcement learning method, which has been invented by one of our faculties, Dr. Frank Lewis. And what this allows us to do is that it uses neurocognitive methods to provide a stable control in unmodeled environment. Because if you have worked with controls, you would know that how difficult it is to develop a control, complex control system, adaptive control system, for environments that are not fully understood, not fully stable, or not dynamic in the sense. So the good thing about it is that you don't need the system dynamics for this, to implement this type of control architecture. So it provides a basic building block for robots that can be out in the open and do much more complex tasks like agriculture or farming, or even do surveillance, manipulation, all these things out in the open where they have to cope with the environment that they're working in. So this control provides the stability and the performance that we need to accomplish that. This is just a block diagram of how this works, and then this chart here shows how this tracks with the simulated model to the actual model. So it's pretty robust in that sense. Another innovation that you'll see in the lab today is hybrid manufacturing. So additive manufacturing, subtractive manufacturing have been dealt primarily separately up to now. People are trying to combine those, but again, the discreteness is not fully gone. Our focus is to how to make that transition seamless. So you have additive processes and subtractive processes all in the same platform, same unit, same product. And then that reduces the cost, that reduces the effort that you need to take between the part handling or even cleanliness for high-value products. So that's something that we have been looking into. And these are a couple of application areas, obviously, in the aerospace industry. It's slightly different than the car manufacturing plants, right? You probably know about that. And so it's a complex operation management challenge. So we believe that the hybrid manufacturing framework can help there. Obviously, in space exploration or space ship repair kind of application, this thing is also very useful. So you'll see this system in the lab today. So this attempt here, it brings synergy between additive and subtractive processes. We have a tool head that has a CNC mill, that has a FDM deposition head, and also a dispensing. It has pick and place capabilities all built into the same module. And by combining that mobility of robotic arms and mobile robots with manipulability of that custom tool that we have developed, we can actually build a very efficient and low-cost tool. So by just replicating these, you can imagine, you can still reach that mass automation volume stage if you need to, but then each module in there will be low cost. So you have the choice, you have the control to what level of involvement, what level of volume that you want to build. So that we will have a small demo in the labs today. Again, this is ideal for low-cost, low-volume product development, which is, by the way, the nature of today's market. If we go one level deep, how do we achieve all these things? What is that fundamental technology that we use to build this and do this? So, obviously, all these systems, all these complex systems, they have uncertainties. And then if we can understand the uncertainties, we can control those. And that is the hypothesis that we are building our research on. So we have a technique. We have, I will not go into the details, but we have ways to analytically identify the uncertainty that propagates within a mechanized or mechanical system. Now that we understand that, we can control that, or we can build systems that can deal with those situations. Again, by knowing what we are dealing with, we can control those parameters that need to be there to compensate the effect of these uncertainties. So we have done that in single robot scenario, we have done that in multi-robot scenario. So again, these show some complex math, but then the idea behind here is that so by using this technique, and then some cases we also try to have a mathematical representation of values such as trust. How do you mathematize trust or confidence? We have a way to do so, and what that let us do that is to bring stability. Because if you trust something and that person also trusts you, there is always a stability between both. And that's the same human aspect we try to build for machines over here. So here you see without the trust, and here you see with the trust, they have much more harmonious and stability between each other. There are three different robots operating in conjunction there. So you'll see again some of those, and this is a brief demo where you see that a drone is basically lifting up from a humanoid robot, and then the robots reposition and they do their own set of tasks, and then again they recombine afterwards. So in this case we are going through five different platforms, all operating on their own operating system, all have their own sets of commands and syntax and to that. We bring synergy between them through obviously the common software platform, and then the handshaking that happens here between the different robotic platforms, they basically hand over the control and retake the control depending on their position and the mission. So here you see that this robot launched the drone, then it lost control of the drone. Now the drone is controlled inside this, and then it communicates with this UGV. And then when the drone lifts up from the UGV, that communication between the robot and the drone is re-established, and they again join together and continue further. Now this is obviously a modest demo of where we are heading. We want to build swarms that can do such things. If you want to do a surveillance in an urban situation or do a frontline defense, we can implement such technologies over there to do that. So again, lastly, to summarize our ongoing research, what we try to achieve is the optimum solution. Optimum means necessary and sufficient, not really spent because we have the money to spend. The optimum, what is the necessary and what is sufficient also, so for that, and then build system fairness between different machines so that we can bring that knowledge-based aspect of it, and then seamless evolution. So when we have machines, we don't really close them, we evolve, because that's how humans do, they evolve. They don't really cease to exist and then reborn. So that's what is done here. And the most of our R&D, the way we run the research here is through joint proposals that we get, that we write to federal funding agencies, and we have been quite successful in the last few years, and you can see that on our website. Sponsored research, this is something that I would like to highlight here, because we also do work with a lot of industries, and if they have a problem and they really don't have the resources and don't want to invest in the resources and then have to deal with all the issues with that, we are happy to solve that problem for them. We are a multidisciplinary institute, and we can take care of a lot of problems, not just in the robotics, but in MEMS, but in biomedical science, in material science. We can do a whole lot of different things. So that's another way of our research. And then we also have a very successful internship program. So we have, obviously you know that we are affiliated to the University of Texas at Arlington. And we have an overwhelming population of students who are always willing and eager to work here. And sometimes we don't even have enough projects to assign to them. So if you have a project, then that's a resource that you can think of using. So through funding the student over a summer or over a semester, and then that student can work on a project that you want. And then what we provide in return is obviously the licensing preferences. If you work with us, then we can work out the licensing details that is more suitable for your line of business. We write publications as an academic institute, so that that gives us recognition and let co-authors and collaborators. We always acknowledge the industry whom we work with. And lastly, I think this is probably the most important one, is that we can provide customized solutions to specific problems that you have, and we can do that at a much lower cost. Just because we have those in-house technologies to reuse our resources, because we can do so, we can keep the cost low, and that benefits the industry here. So that's pretty much what I have for today, and then we'll walk through a couple of our labs, and we'll see what they have going.
Do you have software to simulate some of these
products? Right. We have quite a lot of. I didn't show that in this presentation, but I guess in one of our labs I have a video that shows the software capabilities also. So I can show you those.
And then the sensor technology.
Yes. So we've been involved in sensor technology and miniaturized technology since last two decades.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of capability in not just sensor fusion, but also sensor development, building sensors that can detect a variety of physical parameters. So we have those capabilities.
Yeah, so one of the things that is a problem in the aerospace industry with robots is getting the sensors that are so highly tolerance related, because that's what we're after. A lot of the robots cannot be used on the airplane now because they don't have the accuracy, so you're looking for the feedback loop, the sensors and so forth, to get that down to like 0.2 of a thousandth in a small cube. And that's prevented us from using the typical robot that you see, the arm and so forth. Now there's a lot of other automation that we've done, but haven't been able to crack that one yet.
Yeah, because like you said, if you depend entirely on the feedback loop for the performance, then it becomes challenging, because now you're totally dependent on the sensor, and the sensor malfunctions, then the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
So there are ways to bypass those. So whenever you don't have input from the sensor or something that you think is buggy, then you can replace that with something that we have a definition for that. We call it a trust vector.
Yeah.
So that, basically based on the past performances and based on what the mission tells you to do, and by knowing that what are the precision of your robotic platforms, that trust vector allows you to replace that erroneous information from the sensor. So that basically a asynchronous intervention that we implement on a robotic control architecture that allows you to make it more stable. So the chart that I showed, three robots, they could never really have that synergy between them, because they have their own sensor errors.
Yeah.
Now you imagine you have to bring more and more robots, more and more sensors. That thing all adds up to a lot of error in a very small time.
Yeah.
So by having that trust between them, we can stabilize that. And that's what this adaptive control is about.
Yeah, personal issue. You're from India?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Back in my old days, I had a research and development group at Northrop Grumman. I had 27 PhDs in that R&D group. 25 of them were from India. And all of them got their PhDs in this country. But also did some consulting work for the Indian government in 2013, 2014. And so on their lightweight combat aircraft. I retired out of Lockheed Martin, by the way. So.
Okay.
So, what types of sensor development have you guys done?
We have done mostly MEMS sensors, miniature sensors, and with existing sensors, the commercially available sensors, we have done a lot of sensor fusion. Like if you have multiple sensors, and then how to bring in all the information and then process that. What we have done in past is, again, using the similar type of control, we have a supervisory control method, which is event-driven. So that allows you to combine sensors like temperature sensor, with maybe the torque sensor on a robot and a temperature sensor somewhere situated in on the building. So they all talk to each other and then they share information. And then you also need management of data, because now you have more and more sensors, you have a lot of data. And then if you just keep storing that data, you run out of space soon. So how to identify only the valuable information and then discard not so valuable information, like how to prioritize that based on the discrete event control that we generally implement in this case. We have done those type of work also.
So not necessarily building.
We have built some sensors.
You're talking about integrating different hardware.
We have done that, but we have also built sensors, which I think I can show you one slide. This is one sensor that we have built. This can be used for multiple purposes. This is a spectrometer, a benchtop spectrometer that's been miniaturized to a 1-inch cube. Mm-hmm. So we have built such sensors. We have built MEMS sensors in the past also for gas detection applications. We have built sensors for to simulate skin, and the purpose behind that was to provide skin for the robots so that they can be easily interfaced with humans. So we have built those type of sensors. And this video shows the actual manufacturing steps for the sensors. And this was again fully automated. Well, I mean, the small thing is that we generally work with the agreement that we have them, and that we should not disclose what they're doing because they're kind of trying to commercialize that. But on a general sense, we have worked with small businesses in biomedical area, alternative energy area, and also robotics area. We have worked with Lockheed Martin to develop something that I cannot really disclose here. But we have done this. The Mistress and Fire Control.
Great prayer. Yeah.
So if you have the contact information, that's where I work talking about.
Okay.
Hear more
specific. Okay. Yeah, so
But then we have other like a recent company that's working with us for developing algorithms to detect golf ball logos. So that they can automate the sorting process. There are no barcodes or things of that nature. So I would develop a full algorithm set that would read and identify and improve the recognition rates. So they were operating on something like 98-99% efficiency of ball reads and 30% increase in throughput daily. And so the profitability in golf balls. But it was upwards of $500,000 a year. So just one example.
But it not only recognizes the difference between Atlas and, say, a Wilson ball, but also if there is a cut or a net, so it can reject the bad ones and then sort the good ones.
And they spell out all those items specifically, and that's what we work through. You say, here's our technical needs, here's what we expect to achieve. And that's the interesting thing for Utari is we have dedicated research now. They're focused on timeline deliverables and not necessarily on semesters, because most of our researchers, not all, do not teach. They don't have summer hours to cover or things like that. So they're focused on the timelines that are set up by the sponsors. So whether we have that program meeting together or whatever.
You know, the same thing on the composite call chat. Mm. They sort that in 15-second intervals, and they can reject or accept. And then it goes directly to the final assembly line. But all the major guys go to a company. You might want to think about this company. It's called Century Design, Inc. in San Diego. And the guy that started that company invented the composite golf shaft. And they do a lot of different composites for everything, bicycles, fishing poles, aerospace, doesn't matter. And they come up with some unique requirements for the, I'll give you contact with the president.
Thank you.
But I have some new material It's brand new, and I want to talk to you guys about doing some tests on that material, it's composite material. And it is brand new. It's never been used on a production basis yet. And we're thinking about for aerospace aircraft and specifically for stealth activity. I need to get some readings on it.
Glad to work with the origin.
Yeah. According to how much you need to do the test. What about that?
Any other questions for Dr. Doss? Or, so, we want to thank Dr. Doss and everybody at Atari for having us. Yeah. We have the list, the attendance list today, so we'll kind of pass those around. But if you didn't get one, make sure you grab one on your way out. We've got till 9 o'clock, so if you guys are welcome to stay and network and mingle until 9 o'clock. But we again appreciate Atari for having us out today. And,
sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.